Hello and welcome to recording number 14 of Gary Gygax's Knight Errant, an annotated reading. Today is November 1st, 2021. We've read through about half the book at this point and just finished a pair of sequel short stories. Now, the last few stories in the book, well, the last few, there's six more. And then we're also going to read the story from Dragon 100, the Gord story there. I think that's the last of the Gord short stories. Now, they have been around 50 or 60 pages, most of these short stories. And the last five, or last six that are in the book, are more like in the 30, 35 page. So this one, the Five Dragon Bowl, is a beginning of our shorter short stories right here. So where we are back again into the city of Greyhawk, I believe. All right, it is page 167, Five Dragon Bowl, paragraph 1. Bigwell Biffson is the name. You call me Biff, though, if you please, your faithfulness. Digwell. Yes, I recall. That is a fine, upstanding name amongst halflings of the Whelkwood region, unless I am mistaken. Oh, no, you're quite correct, the gray-clad halfling assured him. I hail from that very place. All right, break. So, Digwell Biffson, I believe, is Melf's companion. We see later in Artifact of Evil. And where it's Melf Kurt, who has left the city of Greyhawk, a Digwell here who's called Biff. And there is a fourth character. He is slain in that story, and he is an archer. He is either called Lizard or Scorpion. I think he's called Lizard, but he is a human. He's not a lizard man or anything. So here we have one of the few characters who's appearing in a second, a second story here. So this is Digwell, and also one of the very few halflings mentioned. We have the halflings mentioned as being notable, as being of the Whelkwood region. Now, halflings are very much a kind of like forgotten entity in the Greyhawk setting. We have Elmshire. And there are several other places where they're mentioned as being part. But halflings really are a bit incongruous with the setting. They're very much a Tolkienism, and especially as they're presented. And Gygax really shied away from the Tolkien because he got burnt by it. When he started out, he just dropped the Tolkien material right into the game, but he had no right to do so. So he was very shy of it afterwards, and he was also ridiculously commented that he didn't have Tolkienisms in. But he had that in his stories. He was heavily influenced by Tolkien, as were most people involved in fantasy at the time. Because there really wasn't all that much there. Tolkien was one of the first modern fantasy writers. So he had a heavy, heavy influence on Gygax. All right, so I'm very, very interested here. Now, halflings are mentioned all the way at the beginning of Saga of Old City, when Gord, as a 12-year-old, is going over into the foreign quarter. He tags along with some halfling tall fellows as they're wandering through the marketplace. So they're mentioned there, and they're mentioned here, but they're really rare as hen's teeth in not only in Gygax, but also in most of what I've seen from published TSR and TSR material, and they are really not heavily involved in the Greyhawk setting. All right, I'm going to continue. It is the fourth paragraph down. From the top on page 167. Why go by so odd a name as Biff, then, my good halfling? The cleric asked earnestly. should proudly bear the name of your famous ancestors." The small fellow squirmed at that, trying to think of how he could get this man off the subject. "To be blunt, sir, there were so many Digwells, Dugwells, Diggerlies, Digdeeps, Digsons, and so forth in my family, and I had so many aunts and uncles, not to mention cousins, that I couldn't keep track of them. My own mother named me Biff. And so it has been since I was but a tiny lot of 12. Now, I'm going to break right here. Now, from what they're saying, it sounds like Digwell is actually the family name, and Biffson is the name given to him by his mother. So it seems like the halfling, at least in the Whelkwood, they get their family name first and then their personal name second. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 167 and the second paragraph from the end. Satisfied at that, the clergyman went on to the subject that Biff feared he would. "Coming from a fine area and upstanding folk, why is it you follow such a low calling? Consider carefully the end it would surely lead to, my boy." The halfling was older than Positive, who was a cleric of some repute, and a staunch supporter of weal and order. But Biff didn't feel any older. Years were one matter, a wisdom and maturity another. He looked down, shuffled his feet, and then looked up brightly. "You see, good Positive, it was the desire of my friend and mentor, the lordly Melf, that I take up the profession of thievery, so as to assist him in ways his prowess with sword and spell were unable to accomplish." Break. So, he definitely is. Igwell Biffson is the Biff from Artifact of Evil. So here it is, and here's one of the few mentions there of Melf. So there we have Melf being mentioned. Now, where this character's name, the cleric's name, is Positive. So we have Positive, Melf, and Biff right here. All right, I've got to restart. It is page 168, and this is the second paragraph down from the top. Shaking his head in amazement and sadness at the elven condition that would encourage dishonest behavior in a halfling, Positive grasped the small fellow's hand, saying, "Dig, if I mean. I hope that our association will be a useful and pious experience, from which I will gain humility and understanding, and you a change of heart. Let us off." If nodded, withdrew his hand quickly to make a sign to ward off ill-omened occurrences, and trotted after the long-legged cleric. "I too wish to make our enterprise all it should be, just as our liege lords, Tensor the Archmage, and Melf of the Green Arrow, have instructed us." Break. So, Tensor the Archmage, and Melf of the Green Arrow. So, that Melf of the Green Arrow, I'm guessing, I don't remember Melf being called that otherwise. And he is Melf of the Acid Arrow. Now, Gygax may not have been allowed, I mean, as ridiculous as that seems, but I have a feeling that they went over these stories and books with a fine tooth comb to have to remove any TSR-isms from New Infinities versions. So, Melf of the Green Arrow. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 168, third paragraph from the end. Positive grunted at that, for it seemed the halfling was rebuking his piety and efforts. While it would be a challenge to accomplish both the task required of him by the mage and his own hopes of salvation for the strayed Biff, Positive relished the prospect. Elsewhere, an ill-matched duo walked slowly along 100 Step Street toward a rendezvous neither desired. A hulking 6-foot-8-inch-tall hillman from the distant east paced beside a dark-haired young thief from Old City slums, who was just 5.5 feet tall in boots. Drake. yes, especially, it's commented here that all the mouth material should be cataloged to ask Luke about. Yes, especially his dalliance with the serving maids in Artifact of Evil. That was filled with a lot of double entendres there, so it was an amusing little bit. Now, we get here in this paragraph that Chur is 6'8". I don't quite remember. I is bigger than I thought. Didn't think he was quite that big. So Chur's 6'8". Now, I had thought that they had mentioned that Gord is only 5'6" or less. I don't remember how tall Gygax was, but I always assume that Gord is Gygax's, you know, a little fantasy creation there, so that, you know, he is living vicariously through Gord's a little overpowered actions, right? Right. And we get the mention of 100 Step Street. We don't know where it is at first. It is one of the named streets in the city of Greyhawk. All right, page 168, final paragraph. Chur and Gord had recently returned from an altogether unpleasant adventure. They were arguing heatedly as they went, neither actually coming right out and accusing, but each blaming the other fellow for their predicament. "Who led us into that damn little alley?" the barbarian said, spitting his words in vehement disgust. "And you were all in favor of it at the time," Gord retorted. Chur shrugged and then scowled down at the small thief. "But I agreed to follow your superb plan to get us out of Rel Mord, didn't I?" "And we got out too, didn't we?" Gord shot back with heavy sarcasm and a look that bespoke volumes about the stupidity of a certain giant who walked beside him. Chur balled a meaty fist but restrained his impulse. "And look where it got us, you little dolt," he said between clenched teeth while waving the fist he did not really intend to use in front of Gord's face. "Oh, stop bitching," the young thief said in disgust. "So we have to do a little favor to repay the chap who bailed us out. What's the difference? It's just another job. The halfling seems clever, and the cleric has laid a sound plan. I'll tell you the difference. Your idea stunk and would have landed us in prison for the rest of our lives unless our enemies managed to have us assassinated, or Quodilda got you first. When the king got wind of what was actually going on, we were meat on the table, that's what. If he hadn't owed a favor, and we hadn't agreed to repay it for him through our cooperation, where would we be? I'll tell you where. In Archibald's deepest dungeon, that's where." Chur's nostrils flared as he spoke with intense fury. "Well, we're not in any dungeon, and what we agreed to is in accord with our usual activities. The mission is beneficial." All right, break. We jump back, and this is another sequel to a sequel. As we started, what they're talking about, of course, is the alley is Odd Alley. And the Odd Alley is a interdimensional portal to a place called Weird Way. Weird Way, then, is like this small, like little miniature plane of existence that is nothing but like a small section of city. And in it are portals to a huge variety of different other alternate dimensions. And so that is Gygax's way of breaking the Greyhawk campaign into literally any other campaign or story, anything you imagine you can go to. So that is, you know, really opens up the whole world of Greyhawk. Now, later on, they took that idea and, in a way, did Planescape, where there was this city, but I'm not so familiar with Planescape, so it's hard for me to comment on it. I just know there was a city called Sigil that reminds me a lot of Weird Way in a sense. So Yeah. Oh, and it's commented back about that MILF that like Chris says, Celiania was the maid back in Artifact of Evil that MILF had a little dalliance with.
It always takes me a minute to look that back up.
Yeah. I will say, I don't recall. One of the reasons I did my indexing is I don't have an exact memory. So it was like, well, where is this? What was this about? And so with an index, I can find it. Now, since we've read these books in such detail, and it's pretty fresh in my mind, I can go back and I can find a lot of things pretty easily. And so that is it's been a wonderful thing going through these. And I've become much more of a Gygaxian after going through these stories. So the other thing is here, so we have this third story here, and the Five Dragon Bowl. And here are the mentions. This is really it goes the weird occurrence in Odd Alley where they go to that interdimensional plane. Then they end up in Relmord, and it's called a revel in Relmord. And now they've come back to Greyhawk. It's the Five Dragon Bowl. So these are definitely different stories, but they're all very much sequential. So we're one, two, three. And so right here, this is connected to the others. How much more enjoyable this is than the ridiculous Tharizdun stuff. Now, they on Sea of Death had a fine conclusion to the Tharizdun line, and I so much wish that Gygax had said, okay. And I don't know why he put an end to everything. I knew New Infinities was driven out of business, but I'm just so sad that he didn't write more. Now, he did write three other books for his Dangerous Journeys line, and these stories stood him in good stead because he really did improve in his writing. And I will have to go through those at a certain point. We're not, it's going to be just something for fun because they do not have Greyhawkisms in it. That is Gygax's new world with Dangerous Journeys. I found those stories when I read them years ago more. I thought they were a little tighter, a little better written, and I'll have to reread them. But there's three more Gygax novels out there. There's some other short stories and stuff. But I really wish he had stuck with Greyhawk, and even if he scraped the serial numbers off. And it's commented that he think that Gygax destroyed the world out of anger, and I heartily agree. I mean, it must have been incredibly frustrating to not only have faced that conflict where they drove him out of the business he started, and not just a normal business, but a really something he put his heart and soul into, and then to be forced not to be able to write his own material about his own setting. That was really that the vindictiveness and pettiness of Lorraine Williams and the people at TSR is just overwhelming. I really find that also colors my viewpoint on the second edition Greyhawk material, knowing where it was coming from and what they wanted to do. And I've lost a lot of respect for Carl Sargent, not only in the quality of his work that he did for the Tweet. And I know people don't agree. A lot of people were brought up on Sargent, and they really love that material. But I really find it that was not a good thing to do. But you got to take work where you can find it. But that really was not a good thing to do, to come there and be the hatchet man who took apart Gygax's Greyhawk. I think that was not a good thing for Sargent. I don't think that was a positive thing for anybody to do. All right. And I definitely do not. It does color my viewpoint of the 2E material. All right. I am going to restart right here. We are on the final paragraph of page 169. Well, we're not in any dungeon, and what we agreed to is in accord with our usual activities. The mission is beneficial. Those whom we must serve, Chert noted as he stomped down one of the long tiers that gave the street its name. So this is 100 Step Street, and we learned that there are these long tiers of steps, and that is something. Now, one of the, it does kind of place it. Now, one of the things about the city of Greyhawk, Igax's version is not on a flat plain. There are hills, there are rises. Old City is kind of on a plateau. River Quarter, the Low Quarter, they're low. And then it rises up to the citadels on a prominence overlooking the Skeleton. High Quarter and Garden Quarter. High Quarter is not just because it's the rich and the high, you know, the rich and the aristocrats living up there. It is physically higher than the other quarters. And then it dips down, and then it goes to Garden Quarter. So there is a contour to the city of Greyhawk that is missing. We get these little things. Like, we have Stoink. Stoink is detailed, and it's very interesting. Lukesh. Lukesh is also on a rise, but the harbor is not. The city itself is on a rise looking over the harbor. And so we get these various things about the cities, and I find it, it is so much better than the flat, featureless kind of thing that they do. Like, when they did the City of Greyhawk box set, it's just flat. It's like, well, here's a big city. Luckily, we were able to put it on a flat plane. And every map you see after that for anything in Greyhawk, all the cities are flat. And that's just not the way it was in the real world. You know, they start and then they curve around and they go with the terrain. And you look at, Italian cities, you look at Rome, look at Paris, you look at Budapest, you look at all these various cities have these interesting characteristics. And instead we get a rather bland version of cities that are just cookie cutter things. In most of the 2E products that came out, very poor maps in flat cities. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 170.
Do you think this is going to High Quarter or something because of the name 100 Step Street, maybe going up?
They're going down the tiers. Yeah. So either they were in High Quarter or coming down from Old City. Because as far as I know, high points are Old City, all right? So they could be coming from, like, the Foreign Quarter. Then you go down, and the Clerkburg, the University District, Low Quarter, River Quarter, the Labor Quarters, they're lower, I think. Then the Citadel, where the fortress is, overlooking the Skeleton, is one of the highest points. And High Quarter and Garden Quarter are both high, raised up above other things. And in fact, High Quarter may be, looking over. So it may be that they are coming down from one of those. With Gordon Chert, I would be thinking more that they're coming from, like, the Foreign Quarter or something. But it's hard to tell where they would stay. If they do not, they're not as wealthy as they were. So I'm not thinking they're coming down from the High Quarter.
Well, that makes for a good story. them losing their money, gaining money and losing money. If they were rich and just sat back, it wouldn't be very fun.
No, I mean, that is the point of the thing. And if that's the point in the game gold is so useless in the game if it's just compiled up. It's like, it's because you can't go. And since it's all on paper and in the mind, you can't go and spend, a huge amount of money at a fancy inn eating the best food and drink and get anything from it but thought process. You can't, you're not going to be able to spend that, gold and get some kind of natural reward out of it, luxury. So you've got to think, how are we going to have our characters enjoy their gold? And one of the ways, of course, is for them to struggle over their gold. Their gold is stolen, their gold is spent, their gold is taxed. Then there's things like the Moat House. The Moat House is a wonderful, wonderful thing because it is a money pit. So the characters go out and they get all this gold, and it's like, well, what are we going to spend? Well, we can fix the Moat House up. So all of a sudden, their gold has value. And they start thinking, we need more gold. You know, and instead of thinking, oh, what do we need another 1,000 gold pieces for? All it is marks on a paper. But instead, it's like, well, we're fixing up the Moat House. You know, that's what we're going to do with our gold. And it's wonderful when you can have something like that. But then the other thing, too, is motivation. If your characters don't need to do something, you know you want to go out and have fun and adventure. The way that Gord is presented as, like, every once in a while, Gord gets a little bored, and he just wants to do something, you know, whether he really needs to or not. He wants to do a good robbery, wants to have adventure. And so your characters want to have adventure, and you want to provide something that is more than just saying, well, that's why you're sitting at the table to play an adventure game. You also want to give them some kind of in-story motivation. So one of the things is, like, they've stolen your gold, let's go get them, you know, or that we don't have any gold, we need some. And that need, that improves the game a great, great deal. And that's why when you start the game out and you're playing a first-level character, you need all this stuff, and it's a struggle to just survive, because you can be killed with one sword stroke, most characters. And that's why the game is more intense and rich and dangerous at first level. And yet, they foolishly go to people and say, oh, first level, you don't have power, it's boring. They're mistaking being a superhero for being a hero. And, you know, they're mistaking being Superman, who can't be injured unless you throw the kryptonite in, for adventure. And real adventure is putting yourself at risk and putting a character at risk and putting a character you have some involvement in. So you really need to like your characters. You really need to name them and backstory them. When you get third or fourth or fifth level, you have things invested in that character. And that's when it's like, I do not want to lose this character. I've invested emotion and time and fun and stories into this character. And that becomes even richer. But the way to do that is start out at first level.
Yeah, it's about the journey.
It is. And that is the mistake. It's not only the mistake in the game, it's the mistake in the life, is that in life people are thinking, I want to get to the end. And it's like, well, no. You don't. It's like reading a mystery novel. A good mystery novel, I don't want to read the last page and find out who done it. I want to read the process of them getting to that. I want to read about the drama, the murder, or whatever, and then the tracking down the clues and the guesswork. I want to feel anticipation. That's a good mystery story that gets you interested. And you're interested in the journey, not just whodunit. Because you could do a mystery story of 4 pages that way, 3 page setup and the last page reveal. You know, that is the big thing. So, it is just... here it is wonderful to have them in a position where Chert and Gord need to do something, and they need to, they're doing this. They Gygax did give them motivations here beyond the normal, let's go out and adventure. This was, you have to do this. Now he did enthrallments, he did Geas, he's done threats of jail, like Chert worried about being thrown in jail for the rest of their lives in Archibald's dungeons. You do wonder what happened to Geller, who was an agent of King Archibald, who rescued them, from Dunstan, who was Archibald's, not servant. He was his, Dunstan of Nurl, Count Dunstan, Count Blamu, vassal. He was the vassal of the Archibald of Nyrond. Yes, and it's comment about, you know, the books are so enjoyable because with there is a decent amount of fantasy writing, and it's decent writing, and it can be funny, it can be intense, the combat scenes can be wonderful. So these books are real gems, I think. These are not classics like Lieber, but they're something a little bit different. And the amount of material that's said here, yes, it is enough to launch multiple campaigns. It's just in, and I, you know, yesterday we talked about, there is a page and a half on Realmord with more information about the physicality of the city than I've seen anywhere else. And Realmord is the size of the city of Greyhawk. I never knew that.
There's a bunch of stuff about Realmord in the Tomb of Horrors book, too. I don't know if I'm going to cover that, but, and I don't know, I read it once, but I don't know how, you know, what the quality is, but there's more information.
Well, you know, when this is done, you know, when not just Knight Errant, but at this point, we're at the halfway mark, all right? We've read three novels. We are halfway through Knight Errant. There's the other half of this and three more novels, and then we're done. Now, I'm not going to stop, so I figure I do want to try reading some of the other source material rather than just the fiction. But I think the fiction reads that the way we're doing things, the fiction works out much, much better as a read notation. It's going to be very difficult and dry reading through like The Folio or Ivid the Undying or FTA. But I also want to be able to pick those apart for small detail. There's stuff that I've been pointed out. It is 41 years since The Folio came out, and I just had some information pointed out to me that I never noticed before. One of the things was about the how the wolf nomads are actually Baclunish Flan. They're mainly Baclunish. They're cousins of the tiger nomads, it's mentioned. But they are a mixture of the Baclunish nomads and the Rovers of the Barrens. And if you look at the migration charts, you also notice that it was the Baclunish and the Iridians who ran into the Rovers of the Barrens, and the Iridian arm of the migration disappears. And the Baclunish arm of that migration runs into the Rovers and merges with them, with part of them, because the Rovers still exist. So then we have this tiger nomads as pure Baclunish, wolf nomads as Baclunish Flan, and then the pure Flan Rovers, and the Iridians nowhere to be seen. So, you know, that is just some little bit. And the point is that what we're doing here, we're pulling out tiny little bits of information, sometimes great big walloping bits of information, like that business on Realmord, the 100 pages on Stoink. Later on, we're going to hear about the Demiplane of Shadows, which was, again, one of the big projects that Gygax always talked about that never saw fruition, supposedly. Like, there's supposed to be a big Stoink manuscript that's out there, and people actually have it. I have a feeling when they reveal what's in it, we're going to find out it's mostly what was in Saga of Old City about Stoink. You know, I think the big Stoink manuscript is going to be, wow, this is pretty much what I read already. You know, I don't think Gygax just recreated Stoink for Saga of Old City. I think he looked in and he used it for part of the story.
Yeah, they were discussing that in the Ask the Experts or the finale of Virtual Greyhawk Con this year.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that's what gets me. But they have those manuscripts, and I was talking to Gary Hollian about that, and I was saying, and he, you know, he was saying too, that really it does seem like those are not going to be, they're not going to be different from, you know, radically different from what Gygax already used. So I think like it's question, wonder if, this is something else. Oh, there's a question whether the Tomb of Horrors description of Realmord is going to be
I'd have to reread it again. It's a little bit after that.
Then I think, you know, that definitely it's worth reading then. I know Tomb of Horrors is one of the ones that stands out on its own. It's not part of that series by Paul Kidd.
Mm-mm. No, it was interesting. I thought it, like, I mean, I went through all the audiobooks, and I think this might have been the last one, and it was refreshing when I got to the end that it was actually, you know, a different perspective and enjoyable.
That's good. So that's definitely one to read. Now, there is a decent Greyhawk book, and I think it's the way that they should have approached the setting after Gygax left, and it's by Robin Wayne Bailey, and it's called Night Watch.
Yeah, I never read that one, so I'm looking forward to get to that one.
Yes, but the only thing is, it's set 100 years in the future.
Well, at least they can't mess anything up.
But the thing was, it's Greyhawk, but all the characters, except maybe for, I think, you know, like what it's done, it said, look, I love the Greyhawk setting, but I really want to do something original. So I'm going to take it, and I'm going to try to show what it would be like in, without technology. You know, it's not taking it and saying they've got steam or cars. It's still a fantasy novel. It's taking it 100 years later so that they can wipe clean the Gygax era and start with their own and yet retain some of the Gygaxian stuff. And I thought Robin Wayne Bailey did the best job out of the writers that I've seen. There are very few people who have done anything published with Greyhawk, and that it's not even labeled a Greyhawk book. It is, you know, and it is probably one of the better written ones, because Bailey was an experienced writer professionally rather than somebody who came up from like TSR, like Rose Estes, who wasn't
or even Gary at first.
Well, and Gary, who definitely wasn't. Now, I have skipped us following the early stories by Gygax in the Dragon Mags about Dunstan and the Great Kingdom, because they're very crude, and the writing is very bad. But also, it's not really about this version. It's almost, you know, it's you can see back then he was formulating his ideas for this kind of thing, but it is nothing like the Greyhawk campaign. It's kind of like he did this Sagard the Barbarian series that was a Choose the Path adventure. And the very first book in it, it takes place up in Radic and the Bone March. And then he takes it out of there and then changes things. But it's really not very Greyhawk-y, even though it mentions specific Greyhawk areas in that right there. So that all early story that he did in early Dragon magazines, I'm going to have to revisit it, but it is not geared. It's not like early Great Kingdom history. It is interesting that the character is Dunstan. He loved the name Dunstan for some reason. It does talk about the Great Kingdom, you know, it is not connected with what we're here or what we really see in the published setting. It's more, probably more a little background that he did very nebulously with the idea in his home campaign, you know, pre-Folio, when he was really doing a wild and crazy mixture of this earth and fantasy stuff thrown in that he did for his home campaign work. Oh, well, that's very interesting. So it said that in Sagard, there's some stuff that can be implemented in Radic. I'll have to go through it. I indexed it, but I don't really remember. And it's not a novel. It's a Choose the Path, which, you know, it's a more difficult kind of thing to, you know, since it's not a set kind of story and it's broken up. So it is easier to index. Because page, you're not looking for following a thought. You're just looking for references. And it is to say, sit down, we're doing what we're doing with the stories and reading them through, because you don't start at page one and go to page 200. You start at page one and go to page 50, to page 27, to page 103, and back and forth and back and forth. And you don't choose every, you know, everything doesn't happen. So it's a strange way to gather, you know, a theme through a choose the path. You know, it's because it is not, you're meant to have variations, and you're meant to have, you know, the way, you know, some things come to a sudden end, and there's only like one pathway that gets you to the very conclusion. So, it, you know, that's a bit of a strange thing. But yeah, some ideas and locales. Like, and we do have some stuff here that we definitely need, small bits and pieces like the ragworm, that we definitely need to sit down and write up. All right, outlet. I'll get back to reading right here after getting off on a tangent.
That was fun.
It is fun. And I want to do, I don't want to just read the book. And I am not just reading the book. When I go on to a long period without commentary, it's really because those sections don't have anything to comment on from what I can see. Now, what I hope is that somebody spots something that I missed and will say, whoa, 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 let's look at this little tidbit that was in there and let's talk about it. And so that's down the road. Hopefully people can go back over what I'm doing and say, well, you skipped something there because you were reading this action story, but something came up that was really worth talking about.
Yeah, it'd be great if it'll grow.
It will. But, you know, the thing is, I take heart from the fact that Cannon Fire has been up 21 years, or 20 years, that Cannon Fire is 20 years old. And I'll tell you, I've been going over the old writing, and I found an article on the Rovers of the Barrens that had not been commented on since 2004. And yet, when I bumped it to the front, a Cruel Summerlord, who's one of the biggest Rovers fans, he was very happy to find this this little article that details all this cultural things about Rovers of Barrens in the Amarin sort of way that I disagree with, but it was such wonderful detail. And yet it was left behind and not pulled up. It wasn't an article. It's just lost within the general forums of commentary. There's so much rich material there that is back there, and I go over them, and I try to, you know, do a little thread necromancy. And I brought this up, and it's been 17 years, and nobody has made a comment or noted this wonderful article about the Rovers. And I think, like, I look at Tim from Jay's show, to how much he loves the Amarin Rovers, how that's a very popular, and here's all this work done. And I don't think it's being noted or referred to or hasn't been. And yet it should be, because it was wonderful work. And there's tons of material like that buried back in the canon. But I take heart from that, because I think if people aren't going over what we're doing today, they're going to go over it. When I first did the index and finished up in 2003, it really wasn't being used. And over the years, people kept referring back to it because it was very handy. So if you build something that is helpful and good and interesting, people will use it or read it or enjoy it. So I have a thing that this, what we're doing here, I'm finding enjoyable and helpful and good. And I think no matter what, I think 20 years from now, you may see people still using it. 50 years from now, we may see people still using it. Because there's no reason why they shouldn't. People come back and they enjoy Sherlock Holmes. And there's Sherlock Holmes societies that take apart the Sherlock Holmes books. There's Dickens societies that go through his material. And that stuff, you know, that's 150 years ago. And I think that the stuff we're doing today, nobody's done this before. I really think they're going to go back, and I think this is wonderful, interesting, entertaining stuff. I think they're going to go back, and they're going to find that this is incredibly useful to take apart these novels, find all these little things that can enrich their campaigns and such. And I mean, it's not like we're discovering a cure for cancer, but I think that this is, you know, a very enjoyable, wonderful thing that's going to outlast us. I think it's going to be used far, far longer. And because it's coming from Gygax, I think it's going to hold its longevity. Even if it's underappreciated now, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, if you just think of Bach, who did some of the greatest music that was ever created, they were using his manuscripts to wrap fish with because he had fallen out of popularity and nobody even knew his music, and it was rediscovered. And I just think with the Gygaxian stuff that there's going to be a renaissance of it down the road simply because the quality is there. And people ask me, what is Greyhawk? Greyhawk is quality. And that is my thing. It is not quantity. It is not popularity. It is quality. So I think what we're doing here is a quality project for quality material. And I think it's going to, you know, be something that even if it's not being heavily worked today, I just think down the road that there's going to be appreciation of the legwork that we're doing right here by going through this. And journey is the end, and I think this journey has been wonderful, much, much better than I had ever expected. All right, so I'm going to restart. It is page 170, and the second paragraph down from the top. Ward was hard-pressed to reply to that. In normal circumstances, he and the huge Hillman would reap all the rewards from an undertaking of this nature. Now they were to serve and assist others, and the payment they receive would be dictated by another. At least we'll have the assistance of others, so our risk will be much less than usual, said the thief. In this undertaking we do need help. Such cattle crap, growled Chert. You know damned well that you and I will end up doing everything. Others will take the treasure, and we'll get a handful of coppers and a pat on the head for risking our lives. After this, I'll never allow myself to be cozened into another of your hottie-peaked schemes, Gord. Hereafter, you're on your own. Break. So, I always love Church's little explicatives here. We need to look back and make a little note of all of them, a little book on Church's cattle crap explicatives. But also, we get him calling Gord's schemes hottie-peaked. Now, we learned that Hottie and Fonkin are two elven insults. And so we have Hottie being used right here again. And we have a character in the G modules called Hottie Fonkin. And so that was a double insult, a nom de plume there of somebody. All right. It's page 170 and the fourth paragraph down. That was sufficient to have started the young thief off on a tirade of his own. Just then they clumped down the last of the steps and turned onto the Avenue of the Bells. The place they were to meet their associates was but a short distance away. There was no time for an angry brawl now. Break. Now, later we're going to hit this story called Twistbuck's Game. But right here, we have two locations with there's no descriptions, there's no placement, they're just floating somewhere in the city of Greyhawk, but we've linked them together. At the end of the 100 steps, all right, there is the Avenue of the Bells. So we have attached those two locations together. Now, later on, when we get all these street names connected together, we form a little bit of a map that starts linking one street to another street to another street. And eventually, if we can put one location in, we can form a whole link of streets from one to another. All right. I'm going to restart, and it is page 170, third paragraph from the end. I'll be very happy to have my fists discuss this matter with yours at a little later date, if you like. But right now, we have some business to discuss with two others, Ward cautioned his friend. Hey, pal, just name the time and place, and my fists will be happy to be there. Bert agreed wholeheartedly. Silver Castle Inn was one of the better such establishments in Greyhawk. Because it was located near the city's administrative center, the artisans' district, and the large religious community as well, the inn housed a varied clientele who, diverse as they were in beliefs and backgrounds, had one thing in common. They were all well-to-do. All right, break. Now, this is an upscale inn. We know it is near the administrative center, the artisans' district or artisans' quarter, and the large religious community. So that puts it, as far as I can remember from the City of Greyhawk map, down the processional, and I assume it's on the other side of, not on the processional, but on the other side, where the halls are the administrative center. The religious quarter and the university district are right up there. Now, to the right of them, I believe that is the craftsman's area. So there's probably going to be some street that is a little south of Old City. And it seems like this 100 steps may have come down from Old City. They're coming down some from some prominence. So either they've come down from somewhere further north of the city, or they've come from somewhere on the east where the Old City is, met the Avenue of Bells, and they're there, like I said, by the halls, the administrative center, the religious area, which is Temple District, I'm trying to remember, and the Artisans District. But the Artisans District, I think, is to the south of Old City and east of the university and the religious areas. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 171 and the second paragraph from the top. And this is a terrible place to meet, too. Gotta hold on your tongue now, Chirk, Gord said with a conciliatory tone and a sense of urgency. We can't allow others to see where we are at odds in this situation. While the two who are aiding us are supposedly of benign sort, we must be careful nonetheless. I know nothing of those who are behind this thing save what the Nirondel told us, and I put no trust in royalty. For once, little man, I agree, the barbarian said sourly, but thereafter clamped his mouth shut in a determined line and ducked his head to enter the inn. Both young adventurers were dressed in their best garments. If the giant was surprising in his size and ruggedness, his clothing was such that the major domo of the inn bowed greetings and muttered vague compliments at the honor of their gracing his inn with their custom. Gordon Chert displayed finery and wealth, more typical of aristocratic establishments of the high and garden quarters of Greyhawk, and the fellow was determined to take no chances with such a pair. Break. So it is very interesting. This is a very upper class inn as a major domo, and Gordon Chert are dressed in their finery that could be very upper class for the high quarter. It is definitely not the higher garden quarter. And as they mentioned, that makes me wonder is it's the Avenue of Bells sounds like it must be near the religious area, and I'm guessing, and this artisans quarter, that should definitely be the east of the university district, and so it seems like this inn must, I wonder if the inn is in the religious area to be such a wealthy establishment. Because it's a little odd kind of inn for the university district, which I don't think seems all that wealthy, more middle class. And it's very odd for the artisans district. But it wouldn't be too out of place for, I think, that the wealthy religious leaders wouldn't have a place, some high class inn like the Silver Castle. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 171, and it is the fifth paragraph from the end. "What might I do for your noble selves?" the man inquired unctuously. Ord quickly stepped before his big companion. "We're here to stay this night, and perhaps longer, if accommodations are to our satisfaction. Your finest suite, and quickly." "Of course, sirs, shall I have a lackey fetch your equipage?" "There is none to be fetched," Gord sneered as he eyed the major domo with disdain. "What we require, we purchase, discarding soiled apparel for the use of those who cannot afford fresh clothing daily, and on the morrow we will need clothiers immediately." "Immediately after we break our fast, do see to it." "We have the grand tower, your worships," the major domo ventured hesitantly, not sure if these extravagant-sounding young men were really what they seemed, or swindlers of some sort attempting to dupe the Silver Castle. Such was not unknown or unusual at a place such as this. Break. So, in a way, this again is jumping back, and it's been interesting in Knight Errant, because Gygax has jumped back to a lot of things he did from Saga of Old City. He is using sometimes like almost like an early 20th century vernacular. They tend, especially for the evil people, they tend to swear and talk like they're in a 1920s gangster picture. And so we have... you know, we have that, and that was the way things were in Saga of Old City. And this story, of course, is supposed to be at the end of that time period, still at the end of that first book. And then there was the theme, always of being able to, there was the theme of duplicity and also of being able to see through that. All right, and now we have a map. Chris has put up the map of yes, and there it is. There is the map from City of Hawks. If you looked in the text channel here, you would see it. Now, Gygax has just described the three quarters here. We've got the high quarter. We have under the high quarter should be the religious section. Is that supposed to be, I can't read it. Is that Clerksburg there? Or?
let me take a look.
It goes H and then something I can't make out, but it looks like a C something. That would be Clerksburg, I'm guessing. CH. Then H. The university.
Oh, it, okay. Oh, the H. CB.
All right.
Clerksburg. You're right.
Yeah. Now, H is the halls, mm-hmm. All right? And is TR, no, that's a trade area. PL, is that the, that's the Plaza de Hot. Where was the temple district? Is it on this map?
I don't see it, but.
I assume, and it's talking about this, it just mentioned, I thought it was down there by the processional. Pardon me. We see the CR, and that's the craftsman. So we can put, I think, the university district at the top between the craftsman and the university. I believe that's supposed to be where the temples are. You know, I think it's the halls, Clerksburg, and then I believe the next thing should be the religious area, and then the university. Now, this is Silver Castle Inn. It is not in the university area. It is somewhere down that dividing line of the quarters. This is near the craftsman, but it's also near the halls, Clerksburg, and the religious area. So I assume that it is just above the university district area up there. And so they came down from somewhere, all right? So I'm thinking that they've come down the old city, and then probably the Avenue of Bells just come down from like the foreign quarter and go the 100 Steps Street, and probably comes down from the foreign quarter and then joins the Avenue of Bells. And that would probably be taking us. Oh, that is an idea. That it's mentioned that Clerk comes from Cleric, and it might be if Clerksburg is instead of being about clerks, it's actually maybe Clericsburg. That's very interesting. I'd never thought of that. And I knew that Clerk business because, you know, it used to be that only the monasteries were one of the few places that where they, were not illiterate. So, a lot of the clerks and scribes and such had studied or were members of monasteries. So that is very interesting right there. And H is definitely the halls. That's the administrative area. So that very, very interesting right there. So we have the Silver Castle Inn, I think, is right down there. The final thing I wanted to say was one of the themes always was about discernment and duplicity. And so we get a little bit about right here. And I think, that seems absurd to me that Gordon Chur are talking about throwing out their clothes and having new clothes made every day. That just seems, pretty silly to me. And that immediately makes the innkeeper suspicious because it does seem ridiculous. So it's either talking about they're still a little naive. Gord seems to have a little naivete about what would be appropriate or not. That just is a little odd that they would say, because they could easily have had luggage with them and some poor slob to drag it on their backs, if they were, wanting to stay and seem a little less ostentatious as they're appearing. All right, well, it is 7:02 now, and didn't get far, but this was much more enjoyable than just reading the story, I find. And I'm going to be off tomorrow, but I'll be back Wednesday, and then off on Thursday. We'll probably finish off. I'm off on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I'll make sure to keep that posted, but it hasn't really been that, that big a thing. I think that works out better for me right now.
Definitely right. Works for me.
and it is. It's so much better. I mean, Chris, it's just so much more fun for me here. And I enjoy it so much more, when you're here helping me out. And the material you provide, it's just amazing. It's amazing. All right. Well, I am going to end for the night. Well, night, everybody.